ESPN College Football Podcast.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi with you. It is September 16th. It is a Thursday as we are a couple days away from the full weekend of week three on the schedule. As promised, on Thursdays, Joey Galloway joins us. We will talk about Ohio State's situation on the defensive side and why Joey's not panicking. Very similar to the Clemson vibe there, where you early season loss, you look at the rest of the schedule, what's in front of them, and why the success of Iowa could help every single week for Ohio State down the road when they get back on track. Also, we'll talk about the USC job situation, and we will go back and forth with our picks. And then later on, we will have Chris Lowe, our college football insider, join us as he takes a closer look at the SEC and a couple of top 25 matchups, as well as the surprise story that is going on in the conference surrounding Arkansas coming off that win against Texas. Before we get to Joey and Chris, two things I want to mention. First, Fantasy Focus Football has new episodes 5 days a week, and they're getting you ready for your week two fantasy football matchup. You can listen to Fantasy Focus Football on your favorite podcast app or watch the show on ESPN Plus and stream season two of Better Days, the Mike Greenberg hosted series that brings the true stories of unforgettable gambling adventures to life. If there's a game, someone's betting on it. All episodes are now streaming only on ESPN Plus. Right now, here's Joey. Joey, it's been an interesting week. Not normally do you see a major job open in the second week of September. We'll get to USC in a moment. I do want to get to your quick thoughts about what's going on at Ohio State. A week ago, I'm telling you that I've got the Buckeyes to win the national championship, and then they lose to Oregon. Ryan Day talks about structural changes on defense. He brings up the last three games, a pattern here with Kerry Combs and with the defensive coordinator. He declined to talk about who is going to call the plays. Just from your perspective and what you've seen from Ohio State over the last couple of games, and including last year, what are your thoughts about where this defense is and what's the problem?
I think it starts up front. The defensive line is not very disruptive. And so that's where it begins. And if you watch the two teams that have separated themselves so far, which are Georgia and Alabama, if you watch their front four dictate to the offense what they can do. If you don't have a guy or a couple guys who are disruptive to the offensive play, then the team gets to send their athletes out, get their running back running full speed by the time he hits to the second level, which we did see in that game, and we've seen it against Minnesota also. So I think it starts there. And I don't know if that is anything that can be fixed from a coaching standpoint. You didn't coach a Chase Young or a Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa into being disruptive. And I think that's what this defense is missing at this point. Now, of course, you can send blitzes. You can bring more pressure. You can bring safeties in the box. You can do some things to become disruptive as a defense. But in the last couple games, it appears that up front, there is nothing that is affecting the offense.
Is this a combination of scheme and also personnel? Because you did bring up some superstars on the college level and now on the NFL level on that defensive front that we saw under Urban Meyer and who they were bringing in defensively when it came to recruiting. Does that play into this, that they can't develop right now? They have some talent, they just can't develop it, or just they didn't have the recruiting classes that we've seen in the past when it comes to defensive ends and defensive tackles?
Well, that I don't know, because I don't know what they're asking individual guys to do. And so that goes beyond what I can just look at and see when I go back and watch the film. I don't know what guys are being asked to read, to look at, what are their keys, those kind of things. They have recruited well. I do know that. And some of their young defensive linemen are freshmen, and we may see those guys develop into the Chase Young types. But I think in this season, we just don't see that kind of disruptive force in the front line.
Yeah, we'll have to see if that can change specifically as the season continues. Let's not forget, I mean, it's still winnable. There's everything's still attainable, right? Yeah. Same way with Clemson, early loss in the season, but still things are attainable in the conference play. You have the same mindset here with Ohio State, right?
Exactly. The difference for Clemson is they're going to need someone else in that conference to be good. What happened to the ACC is North Carolina also lost, and they were the second-ranked team, highest-ranked team in ACC. Miami also lost. And so the ACC as a whole took a hit. And then we start to look at Clemson's remaining schedule and say, where can they get a good win? Where can they get a signature win? The Big Ten is different, especially because Iowa is playing very good football. And if they continue, they will be a top 10 team. Ohio State doesn't have Iowa on their regular season schedule, but they would have a chance to face an Iowa if both teams went out in the Big Ten championship. And there goes that signature win that Ohio State might need. Clemson's situation might be a little different.
Fair point there. Let's go to the USC situation. Everybody's weighed in. I just want to get your quick thoughts on who do you think would be the ideal fit for USC right now at this stage as they begin this coaching search? And without one of those search firms, they're doing it internally. Who's the guy in your mind for the fit?
It's always an interesting question to me, Kevin, and maybe you can clarify. I don't understand, and I've heard people answer this question for years. What makes someone a fit at a college? I just know that there are good football coaches out there. But what is it that people look at and say, okay, this guy fits at a place as opposed to he's just a good football coach?
I think a lot of stuff weighs in each instance. It's how you are with the alumni and the boosters. Some schools, we all know that, especially if they're paying out, can you have relationships built in? Also, how are you in the environment where you're at? Like, USC is a completely different, I think, different place than potentially, you know, when you look at where that school is and what their facility is about, than in certain places like Texas, certain places like Ohio State. It's just different. They're mentioned in the same sentence when it comes to Blue Bloods. It's just a different venue and a different belief system. And also, what's the commitment coming from the president, from the AD to football compared to other factories that we've seen out there? So I just think that all plays a role here. And can the coach have the personality to get along and meld with everybody along those lines in each different instance? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. What makes sense is clearly you don't know either. So
wait a second. What do you mean? I don't know either. USC. Listen, USC is a different place. Like USC. Yeah. I talked to some a USC alum yesterday, and specifically they were like, we were mentioning names, and they're like, he doesn't fit. He doesn't fit. And I was like, why? And he's like, hey, we don't need that type of guy. We don't need this type of guy. And I was like, okay.
When we start to talk about the boosters and your relationships with the president and the AD, we don't know these people. It's not like we know the boosters and we can say, hey, he's not going to gel with those boosters. We don't know them. We don't know what the relationship would be between the president and the coach, the AD and the coach. What I do know, winning fixes a lot of problems. Any booster you know, any president you know, any AD you know, if they get a coach that can win, they can deal with a lot more things. And so you take a Bill Belichick, who you would look at and say, he doesn't fit by personality anywhere on the planet. He might fit on the moon somewhere, but anywhere on the planet, his personality doesn't fit. But he wins.
But so, Joey, there's a backstory to this, too.
Give me
Belichick,
the backstory.
Belichick did not win in Cleveland.
And what happened?
But understand, each place is different when it comes to patience. Like, for example, you go to Texas, week two, it's like, oh no, what are we doing? Sark is in trouble, right?
Yes.
Other programs, like, let's just UCLA.
Right.
Give Chip some time. So certain places and certain boosters and certain presidents have a longer leash to establish a winning culture while some want immediate results. And listen, with this USC opening is actually the opposite of feelings around campus and the vibe around the program being like down, because they wanted Clay Helton gone for a long time. So I don't know what that means in like on the field, but I can tell you it's a different spark than it was, a week ago with Clay Helton.
You just made my point, Kev. You just made my point. Winning is what matters.
It's when you win, though. I'm saying to you, some places give you 1 year, 2 years to develop. Some places are like, you need to win now.
So the key word in both those sentences you just said is win. You have to win. I don't know of many places nowadays that are very patient, because what was Clay Helton's record last year?
I think it was 6-1.
Yeah, I think it was, I was going to say 5-1 or 6-1.
6-1, yeah, something like
okay.
that. Okay, depends on how many games.
They're not patient. Like that, I don't know many places that are patient nowadays in college football, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. Now, the key word you said was win, and that's what I said. It all comes down to when can you win football games? I don't know a booster. I don't know the president. I don't know the neighborhood. I don't know the meet. None of those things. All that matters is who can go in to any one of these schools and win. Mm. All we need to know is how much patience does the program have and mm-hmm. how quickly you got to turn around and win football games. The rest of that nonsense that we all, not just you, Kev, that we all say, well, does he fit at this place because of the boosters, because of the No. Winning fits everywhere except if you're Temple or UConn. then you have to worry about things like.
You ain't right, man. You ain't right to put that in there. I can tell you, here's the thing. You changed it. You changed the entire answer to what I was trying to say by using the same words winning, but then you added patience. And that's what I'm trying to stress to you.
No, but we don't know.
Certain places have patience. Certain ones do not.
That's it. That's all we can say. Yes. We don't know the relationship with the president. We don't know the relationship with the boosters. We don't know none of that.
I don't know one candidate from you because you've avoided the question completely.
Yeah,
you have one coach.
The person out there to me that it baffles me hasn't gotten a coaching job somewhere is Eric Bieniemy. I don't know if he's a nice guy. I don't know if he's going to have a relationship with the president, which I know is very important to you, Kev. All
no,
I know is
not to me.
He's been very successful in Kansas City. Clearly, they've been winning. Clearly, he's done a terrific job and doesn't have a job. Everybody else that has had success in winning, success in like having a very explosive offense, they get a job opportunity. He hasn't. I would like to see him get one. I think Luke Fickell is another guy that is going to win, which is we just came to the agreement, Kev,
yeah.
that winning is what matters, except at Temple and UConn.
We'll see about the Bone Fickell relationship. And to your point with Bieniemy, Adam Schefter reporting earlier this week, league sources say that that there could be an interest there, and he would be potentially interested if there was a job opening, as he has ties to Southern California, and that would be one of the jobs if it was available in college that he would consider. But you're right; he should have been an NFL coach 2 years ago, even last year. It's ridiculous that he's still an assistant with the Chiefs. All right, let's get to our picks. All right. Taylor, you want to give us an update here on how we did? I was down one game behind Joey after opening week.
Well, Kevin, unfortunately, Joey's lead went from 1 point to 2 points this week. Joey went 3-3 with his picks. Kevin, you went 2-4. You guys agreed on everything except for that Texas-Arkansas game. Kevin, you picked Texas. Joey, you went Arkansas, so that was the difference. And I'll keep the overall records to myself right now.
I took Arkansas. You took Texas. You're right.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, darn you, sir. Not his fault, though, as they're trying to figure out their quarterback situation. And you know what? No, it's a credit to Arkansas and Sam Pittman and the physicality that we saw from the Razorbacks. All right, let's go to our picks. Cincinnati, and this is an interesting one, number 8 in the land, a -4 against Indiana. Who you got?
I will take Cincinnati in this one, and not because of Indiana's interesting. They hadn't played to the level of the Indiana we expected to see in this season. I think Cincinnati is a really talented physical football team. I'll take Cincinnati.
I'm with you. I'm taking Cincinnati as well. Let's go to – I'm going to make the next pick first, and I find this really intriguing. Number 15, Virginia Tech at West Virginia. Morgantown, West Virginia favored by 3. So that means neutral field, they would be a toss-up here. I'm going with West Virginia laying the 3.
I like that pick, Kev, and I like it so much because I'm going Virginia Tech. So that's going to be a chance to get another game on you. I have some personal feelings toward West Virginia because in week 1 I had the over West Virginia Maryland at 57. They scored 41 points in the first half. I kicked back. I put my feet up. It was a win, and they did not make it to 57. So now they hurt my feelings. I'm going Virginia Tech.
That was a fun first half. And Taylor's our Maryland Terp here, so we all just blame Taylor for that, for not making you happy and taking the over there. All right, Michigan State, 2-0. At Miami, Miami favored by 6. Miami obviously dealing with Alabama in the opener and then Appalachian State surviving that game, as well as the Cats surviving in the stadium fall. So who you got in this one?
I'll take Michigan State. I think Mel Tucker has something going here where the kids believe in what they're trying to do. And I think that matters. I think that's the opposite of what Norvell has at Florida State right now. I don't know that the kids believe in what they're trying to do. I think you can see a difference in this Michigan State team, and I'll go with them.
I'm taking Michigan State in the points as well. They can run the football, and that's the one thing that really stands out. They've established that identity in the team. Purdue at Notre Dame laying the 7. After what we saw last week against Toledo, that was dicey for Notre Dame. Back-to-back weeks, surviving against Florida State and surviving against Toledo. I'm taking Notre Dame and laying the points at 7 because I think that this will be a breakout game.
I think this would be a breakout game. It's pretty funny. It's funny because I would like to go with you. After the first week, I had that same feeling.
Okay. Yeah.
They just didn't finish. It was sort of a fluke. We know they're talented. They're going to break out. I'm going to pass on the breakout. I'm going Purdue. But I feel you, Jeff. Nothing like the entire country is sitting back thinking, we know Notre Dame is better than this.
Exactly.
They're going to break out.
Yes.
Whatever. I'm going Purdue plus the points.
All right, Jack Cohn, we're riding a lot on you. Okay. I actually want to ask you specifically, Bama 14.5 against Florida. Will Bama cover that spread? That is a lot.
I'll take Bama. I'm going to take Bama. If every week you ask me, Bama versus anyone else besides the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm going Alabama. I just think...
Covering. You're going with Alabama covering regardless.
And covering. I just think that right now, this Alabama team seems to be on a mission. And until a team proves that they can go in there and stand up to the pressure that the defense is putting on them, I'm going to go ahead and go Alabama.
Yeah, and honestly, Florida losing Ventrell because he got a bicep injury, the linebacker. And so I'm going to go with Bama 14.5. That 14.5 is a lot of points in the swamp, but I go with Bama. Carolina -8 at home against Virginia. Our boy Mac, oh man, this is going to be a tough one because Virginia can sling the ball around. I'm going to take Virginia and the points, but I think North Carolina will win the game. How about that? Carolina wins, but I'll take Virginia's and the points.
Yeah, way to hedge your ass, Kev. I'm disappointed in you, but I guess I shouldn't be. You did the same thing when it was UCLA and LSU. Two of your best buddies were going. That's sad, Kev. I'm going to go Virginia.
Whoa, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, but I don't care. You care about Mac's feelings. I like Mac. Mac is a very nice guy, but Mac's going to have to play some defense here eventually.
Yes.
So I can't pick them. They don't play any. It's funny. I think the over-under on this game is 64, and I think they're going to get there. Easy.
Especially with the game Armstrong had last week and what Virginia can spread the ball around. I'm with you. All right, the whiteout game. Penn State laying 5 against Auburn, that environment. I'll just take this. I'm taking Penn State laying the points just because I want to see Bo Nix do something, and that environment's going to be so crazy. I'll take the Nittany Lions and that defense against Bo Nix on the road.
I'll take Penn State also. I don't know that Bo Nix has become that big game quarterback as of yet, so we just haven't seen it this season. New coach, new situation, he might be, but going to Penn State in the whiteout is a tough thing to do. I'll take Penn State.
So you got me rooting for Notre Dame and West Virginia this weekend. That's the bottom line, right? Yes. You're on the other side with Bot Tech.
And Max Feelings. Throw Max Feelings on the
offensive board. Hey, happy Mac is a good thing, man. You and I both know that.
Yeah, good luck, Mac.
I can care less about your feelings. A happy Mac. By the way, we want to let the audience know that at one point on Saturday, before Joey leaves, just some inside studio stuff. We're doing ABC Joe, Booger and I, and Joey stops by to say hi. They have the U.S. Open going on the men's side. So Joey has a break on the ESPN side. He comes to visit our studio. And literally it's like he's on the side set with us, sitting down 2 feet away from Booger. And they go, 3, 2, Joey, you got to go. Joey does not get up. And Booger and I do the entire broadcast with Joey sitting right next to Booger. And the poor director has to get the camera guy to get into a tight shot while Joey was our live in-studio audience.
Having me in studio on your set only adds credibility to what you guys are doing up there.
You should have joined us, especially when we're talking about Ohio State and what happened at the Shoe. Having you weigh in would have been great.
Again, Boog could barely get a word or two in that halftime. Stop. I can't even imagine if I were to try to chime in because you got a one shot going for 80% of the time and you're rolling and all Boog can get in is nice play right there.
All lies. All lies. All lies. Absolutely lies, man. Joey, we will see you, of course, on Friday in studio on ESPN and Saturday all day in studio on ESPN. Appreciate you. Talk to you.
All right, guys.
As promised, we like to do this every single Thursday on the College Football Podcast, bring in a college football insider. And it's great to have Chris Lowe back with us as we take a look at the SEC. Handful of interesting matchups and storylines, of course. The one we circle is in the swamp featuring Alabama and Florida. And there are a couple of things we could approach here, Chris. The quarterback situation with Florida, because there are a lot of people in the Gator Nation that are like, Anthony Richardson right now. And Dan Mullen's been very patient and understanding because Emory Jones has been with him through multiple stops, and he's giving him a fair, legit shot. But Alabama's in town. And Dan wants to finally beat Nick Saban. He's 0-10 all time against Saban. Your thoughts about this matchup and what we can anticipate here with the quarterbacks?
And I don't blame Dan because you're probably going to need both of them during the season, whether it's this game or later on. When you look at the quarterbacks that have given Alabama problems over the years, really outside Trevor Lawrence a few years ago when they just decimated Bama in the national championship game, it's been quarterbacks who can get out and make things happen with their legs, and also are dangerous enough throwers. And I think when you look at the Florida fans, that's probably what they see in Anthony Richardson, a guy that can do a little bit of both, who's dynamic running the football, that really puts pressure on defenses. And I don't blame Dan. I mean, I don't think you really commit or have to commit to one right now, because he knows, and Dan's been as good with quarterbacks as anybody, he knows you're probably going to need both of those guys at some point during the season. But, you know, you talk about Mullen finally beating Saban. Who in the East has beaten Saban? It's been 2010 since anybody in the Eastern Division has beaten Alabama. I was at that game. That was South Carolina, Stephen Garcia with the game of his life in 2010. That's the last time, which is really hard to believe, that anybody in the East has beaten Nick Saban in the Tide.
It's wild to think it's been 11 years since Stephen Garcia was playing in the SEC. And by the way, you know, that record is 31-0 for Saban, you know, 31 straight wins against the East. The other thing that Florida, when you look at some concerns, they're beat up defensively coming into a game where Bama's a machine here on the offensive side. That's what I fear the most. I mean, I have no question that Dan will find a way to score points, because he's just Dan Mullen. This team, and he's so creative, it's just I fear for it getting out of hand on the defensive side against this Bama offense. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and, you know, to your point about Dan scoring points, they played him as well as anybody last year in the championship game, Florida did, and they were able to score points. But, no, I'm right there with you, man. This Alabama offense, when you look at what they've done under so many different coordinators and what they've become, I don't care who they lose on the staff, who they lose at quarterback, they just reload. And under O'Brien, I think they're good enough running the football that they can, you know, play bully football, which Alabama has been very good at, but they can spread you out and throw the football. I remember talking to Charlie Strong last year. Charlie was an analyst on that staff. He's now with Urban Meyer Jacksonville. And he told me early in the season, even before, and everybody knew Mac Jones was going to be the quarterback, but he says, listen, I'm going to tell you what, when this kid gets his chance, he's talking about Bryce Young. He says he's not real big. He says, you wonder if he can stay healthy, how durable he can be. But if he is, he can throw it with the best of it. And I think we've seen that. I don't know how much Bama has really had to show on offense after jumping up there in the first half they went the way they did on Miami. Now, don't tell Nick Saban that, because we're going to stern lecture about not playing a whole football game. But they really haven't had to do a whole lot on offense in the last, what would you say, game and a half? I think you'll see a lot more from them in this football game on the offensive side of the ball.
Gators losing Ventrell Miller, the linebacker, bicep injury. He's out indefinitely. That's a big hit for a team that needs mobility, especially against Young, who can run around in the pocket and still deliver the pass. Let's go to the other matchup here when we talk about the top 25 featuring the SEC. Auburn going inside the whiteout and dealing with that. And to me, it's the most electric environment in college football, what Penn State can offer, a night game with a whiteout. Bo Nix has not played well on the road in his career. What have you seen from Nix early on in Harshen's scheme and in that era that gives you some type of confidence that Auburn can pull off an upset?
We know they're doing some different things with Bo. And, you know, he's playing from under center more, giving him some flexibility. But do we know less about a team than we do Auburn at this point? I mean, they have been explosive, yes, but they just haven't played anybody. So I think whether it's Bo Nix, whether it's that entire football team, we find so much more about Auburn this week. And I agree, man, that is the best environment, the best game day environment in college football that I've ever been to, and that's a whiteout there in Happy Valley. He's got to take care of the football. I think that's the first thing. The last thing you want to do if you're Auburn is go up there and get behind early. You know, have a couple three and outs, turn the football over them, give Penn State a short field. But get some momentum, get some confidence early in your offense. And everybody talks about Bo Nix. They got to play well around him. They got to protect him. He's got to have some guys make some plays. I'm talking about throwing 5 yards, you know, hitches, 10 yards, hitches, and making big gains after the catch. I thought Bo Nix, when he got to Auburn, had all the ability, being able to move around, make plays with his feet, throw the football, had a chance to be among the top two or three quarterbacks in the SEC. And I think one of the biggest criticisms of the last regime of Gus Malzahn, and listen, Gus did a lot of things well, is Bo did not progress nearly as well as I thought he would. Under Harsin, this is our first chance in this type of game and this kind of environment to see what kind of progression Bo has made.
Cannot wait. That game on ABC primetime on Saturday night. We saw a team in primetime last week make a statement, and that is Sam Pittman in Arkansas. What they did to Texas and KJ Jefferson. I come back to the physicality of that Arkansas team against Texas. Are they your biggest surprise so far in what we've seen the first couple of weeks in the SEC?
None of them are my biggest surprise. I think to what I've seen to this point, they may be as well a coached a football team as you've seen in college football. Listen, it's no secret that they beat you up physically. Sam's an old offensive line coach. He takes pride in that. You talk to the guys who played for him on the offensive line, down through the ranks, they rave about his ability to get the most possible out of his players, the way he's just so down to earth, but pushes and challenges guys the right way. I love the fact that when Sam came in, he had enough, he was secure enough in his own skin. Look at who he surrounded himself with. He brings in Barry Odom, who has been tremendous as a defensive coordinator, who's been a head coach. You know, some guys getting their first job as a head coach are a little bit insecure about bringing in somebody who's been a head coach before, not Sam Pittman. Kendall Browse on offense, not afraid to do some different things on offense. So I think when you look at that mix, the way he surrounded himself with really good coaches and the way he's built trust in his players, that you talk in this day and age more than ever, you talk to players about their coaches and who they want to play for. It's those coaches that right away come in and establish that trust. And I think you see that throughout the Arkansas football program.
I'm so glad you brought up Odom, because he brings the experience there to help some stability, right? And a little chip on his shoulder, the same way I would describe the chip on the shoulder as Moorhead has at Oregon, right? Where they've been there, they understand failure, they come back and say, all right, well, let's do things differently, but also add stability to a program. And we saw that payoff for Oregon on the road at Ohio State with that offense. We're seeing that payoff right now with Arkansas. Their schedule, though, we peeked at it over the next month, Chris. It is brutal. And you can make the case for a lot of teams in the SEC it's brutal. But, I mean, it is immediate when you – let's just run down Arkansas' schedule and what's in front of them, because you sit there and you pause and you're like, oh, man, they've got to figure some things out early. Let me pull this up real quick. How about this? So this weekend they've got Georgia Southern. Afterwards, A&M at home, then Georgia – then Ole Miss, then Auburn. I mean, you got to handle your business this week feeling good off the Texas game. You can't have a letdown by looking ahead to A&M next week. And then you got to find a way to build momentum, because it feels like there's potentially a shot there with the A&M quarterback switch. And it's Zach Calzada now as they try to figure out their offense.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to see Haynes King at quarterback until at least mid-October. I think he's out for the next several games. So yeah, that's one for Arkansas as you go into that stretch that you hope you can get. And now obviously A&M is a load outside of Haynes King. Here would be my concern for Arkansas in that kind of gauntlet: how healthy can they stay? Because they like to play physically, they like to beat you up, they can run the football. I do think that plays in their advantage that they can maybe shorten some of those games with the way they can run the football. But as you get into game two, game three of that stretch, where are you physically? Do they have enough depth? See, I don't think Sam, in just his second year, has had enough time to recruit to exactly the way he wants to play, to create depth the way he wants to. And that's where you separate Bama and Georgia, you know, the very top tier of the SEC from everybody else, is they have a guy go down. You know, you look at Alabama, they have a guy like Chris Allen go down at outside linebacker. They don't drop off. The lower-tier teams in the SEC have not, especially a guy like Sam who's only been there, this is only his second year, you're not able to develop and recruit to that depth. And that's where I think when you look at that stretch, it's going to be really, really challenging for Arkansas, because it's not your first 22, it's your first 35, your first 40 where you win those kind of games.
Excellent point, Chris. And that has been the storyline from the haves and the have-nots there, especially the top part of the SEC to the middle part and to the bottom. What kind of depth do you have for an entire season as you deal in week in, week out with the body blows? Chris, it's been great. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for emptying the notebook here in the SEC. Have a great weekend, and look forward to having you back here on the College Football Podcast.
You bet, guys. Great to be with you.
Big thanks to Chris Lowe as well as Joey Galloway. Taylor, I love it, and I want to continue. We will do this every Thursday where we have a reporter and an insider empty the notebook after we make our picks. It's always good, and hopefully we will have Heather Dinich with us next Thursday with her emptying the notebook on all the information after the first month of the season. ESPN Radio, by the way, has two games you can enjoy over the weekend. Nebraska at Oklahoma, old school rivalry game. Tune in at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN Radio. And USC at Washington State, tune in 3 p.m. Eastern time. The ESPN College Football Podcast, by the way, will be back on Sunday. Matt Berry, Paul Feinbaum, those guys will be recapping the weekend. Make sure you don't miss Paul's fantastic takes. And Taylor Schwenk, always on the other side, making us look good and feel good on our podcasts on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Enjoy football.